You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. On Thursday, March 28, 2013, John Cummings presented the fourth lecture in our six-part Thursday series entitled The Civil War Through Different Lenses. In this podcast, Cummings talks about photography during the Civil War. Listen to the story of Dr. Reed Bontecou, an army surgeon who took it upon himself to photograph the effects of the war on the human body. You'll also hear the story of G.O. Brown and how he acquired the many Civil War photographs that bear his name. John Cummings is considered to be an expert on photography in the Civil War. His blog discusses the social, political, and cultural aspects of the American Civil War battles fought in Spotsylvania County, Virginia. The lecture series was organized by award-winning historian and Charlottesville-based author, lecturer, and cartographer Rick Britton, in conjunction with the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Our podcast is entitled The Battlefield Photography of Dr. Reed B. Bontecou. Here's John Cummings.
Good evening, everybody. I can be heard, right? Okay, that's a good thing. What I'm going to talk about tonight is a series of photographs that up until only past 10 years, there wasn't really much known about them. But after you see them tonight, some of the samples that I'll show you, I'm sure you'll find that they're very familiar. If you talk about images of the Wilderness Battlefield, Chancellorsville, Spotsylvania Courthouse, wartime images, very few exist that were actually taken in 1864, 63. Those taken by Alexander Gardner, Timothy O'Sullivan, you know, the pretty well-known images. Because everybody now knows that we don't give credit to Matthew Brady for every single photograph ever taken, right? That's just wrong. But there was a series of images that predominantly showed skeletal remains and busted trees. And a lot of these images ended up first being published in the 1880s in the Century magazine, and eventually all the articles in there were collected into a group called Battles and Leaders of the Civil War. So these were just little engravings. In the 1880s, they couldn't reproduce photographs in publications. But these images eventually, by 1911, were featured in Miller's Photographic History of the Civil War. And then they just sort of floated around for a while, and nobody really knew who took them specifically. Apparently, none of the original glass plate negatives still exist. And these were all stereo negatives to begin with, just like the vast majority of photographs you see in books. Of the Civil War, these images were stereoscopic, like your ViewMaster, but you know, they were on cards, and each side was roughly a 3x3 inch image. Scanned in high resolution, there's a lot of detail that's coming out of these 3x3 images, but this series by 1994, or a few years previous to that, was getting a lot of attention from a gentleman named Wendell Lang, who was a collector, author, relic hunter out of New York. And Lang had realized that these images seemed to all belong to one series. It was clear that in a lot of them you could see numbers scratched into the emulsion. And the highest number that was known was 121. And Wendell started collecting all that he could find out of various collections, the Mullis collection, the Carlisle Barracks, West Point. He even contacted National Park Service facilities and inquired, especially the ones at Fredericksburg and Spotsylvania. And he was rather persistent, you know. What do you know about these? Do you have any in this series? Here's what I've got. And you know, it kind of was an in-joke with some of these guys. Everybody knew Wendell. Unfortunately, before it got too far, he passed away. He was only 55. But before he did die, I think about a year before, he had contacted William Frazzanito. And if you know Civil War photography, William Frazzanito is the guy on Then and Now images. He did Gettysburg, A Journey in Time. That came out in 1975, and he's sort of the granddaddy of all this, where, you know, take an image and find it on the battlefield today. He said, Wendell said to him, you know, what do you know? Who is this guy? He says, well, we really don't know, but there's this woman in Texas. Robin Stanford is her name, and she has a huge collection of stereoscopic images of the Civil War. She just buys them up. And she's got 15 of these images, random numbers. They're not consecutive, but and they all have the back mark on them, and I'll say back mark. It's an applied sticker, basically. And it says American Scenery, Stereographic, and the photographer's name is printed as G, period, O, period, Brown, photographer out of Baltimore, Maryland. So Bill and Robin and Wendell, everybody was like, well, this has to be G.O. Brown. He's the photographer. Well, as I said, Wendell passed away, and in 2004, hobbyist group, the Center for Civil War Photography, they have annual seminars, and they came to Spotsylvania, Fredericksburg area in 2004, and Robin Stanford came, and she brought with her those 15 specific wilderness Spotsylvania images. And everybody was hanging around Robin. Ooh, ah, wow. Well, one of them in particular was one that I had been very fond of for many, many years. And I don't know if this was the first time I had seen it, but it appeared on the back dust jacket of a book called The Desolate South, 1865, 1866. And this edition came out in, I think, the 1960s. But nonetheless, originally, this was a book by a northern journalist named John Trowbridge. And in the summer of 1865, after the war was over, Trowbridge came south to walk around the desolate South. And he spent some time in Fredericksburg, Spotsylvania. He'd hire people to drive him out and give him the grand tour. And this image in particular, and I'll have it projected later, but it shows a sign on a tree, and the tree's pretty badly shot up. It's had some work done on it with an axe as well, but it's clearly riddled by bullets. But the sign says, on fame's eternal camping ground, their silent tents are spread, and glory guards with solemn round the bivouac of the dead. Now, we all know that. If you go to any national cemetery, that poem is in every one of them. So there must have been some people buried nearby. And actually, what happened is in the months before Trowbridge showed up at Spotsylvania, there was a burial crew that came, and this is just over a year after these Union men had been killed. They came to retrieve the bodies, collect them into cemeteries, and they left the Confederate dead lying where they were, but they were skeletalized. But Trowbridge came along the bloody angle, and he actually spells it out here. He says, riding west from the courthouse, we passed McCool's house in a pleasant, shady place and reached the scene where the 8 days' fighting culminated. Of the woods despoiled by the storm of iron and lead, only a ghostly grove of dead trunks and dreary, dry limbs remained. Keeping around the western edge of these, we came to a strange medley of entrenchments, which it would have required an engineer to unravel and understand. Here Grant's works had been pushed up against Lee's, swallowing them as one wave swallows another. Nowhere else have I seen evidence of such close and desperate fighting. And indeed, at the bloody angle, this was some of the worst fighting that men had ever seen, and many of them would not even talk about it for the rest of their lives. They hesitated. There was nothing glorious about that near 24-hour encounter at the bloody angle. But then Trowbridge goes on to say, upon a hacked and barkless trunk at the angle of the woods in the midst of graves was nailed aloft a board bearing these lines, and that's what I've already read to you. So I was very intrigued by this for years and years. And then Robin Stanford had an original copy of that. And again, everybody was oohing and aahing, and I saw that. I said, boy, that would be cool. And it had just a simple thing. It was said Wilderness Battlefield, basically. It didn't say Spotsylvania. But here was a reference, a wartime reference. But in April of 1866, a year after Trowbridge's visit, Theodore Lyman, who was a aide-de-camp to General Meade, commander of the Army of the Potomac, on April 15th, he actually is traveling with his
quartermaster's party had done its work on this field
through the wilderness. Not only are the remains not collected in a common cemetery, but many marked graves have been overlooked. But after all, the graves give little idea of the carnage here. Piles of men were thrown into the deep holes behind the entrenchments, built for cover by the enemy, and simply buried by digging down the parapet upon them. So here these men are lying where they fell. They just push the earthen parapet over top. And today I believe that there's a real long section right there at the bloody angle, which if you look at how it seems filled in and just not like everything to the left and everything to the right, I believe it's still a mass grave. But, so, Lyman goes on saying, only the scattered dead and marked are marked, and of those, probably only a portion. It is here that the background of the large oaks is completely dead. The trees girdled by bullets, and the red oak, 23 inches in diameter, was cut down by bullets only. And, he points out, nailed to a tree is a board with this verse. So, it's 1865, it goes up. 1866, it's still there. And as I will demonstrate, the day before Lyman sees it, it was photographed by another party. I was really intrigued by that image and, of course, all the others that Robin had. And so G.O. Brown, I had to find out who he was, and I wanted to find out where that hacked and barkless tree stood. So I went digging around in the census records. And if you've done genealogy, you know it can really be tough. What these people think is written on a piece of paper is sometimes well beyond reality. But eventually I found an 1870 census record for a G period O period Brown photographer in Baltimore. Okay, that's great. So where was he before and where was he after? I dug and dug and dug and dug and dug. Oh boy, it was tough. Well, it took so long, it's been years, believe me, and I had been buying whatever I could find by this fellow. Any photograph I could find on eBay, I was competing with some deep pockets occasionally to pick these up. But one of them, interestingly, same thing, American scenery, stereoscopic. And it says, Willow Grove Pond, Burdett, New York. G.O. Brown, photographer, Baltimore. So it's like, what is he doing in Burdett, New York, which is on Seneca Lake? Upstate New York. So, okay, well, that's hopeful. So I start saying, there's got to be a connection to Burdett, New York with this man. And eventually, yeah, it all began to come together. That in 1863, at like 19 years of age, there is a George Oscar Brown who lives in Burdett, New York, and he's a store clerk. No real idea what he's selling, but apparently his parents have some influence and they're big people in town. So after he became a photographer in Baltimore, he went and photographed his boyhood home. Okay. So I worked and worked and worked and worked. Figured out where he lived in Baltimore. Found out where he's buried, even in the same cemetery that John Wilkes Booth is. You know, if you go to travel around Baltimore sometimes, you know, it's when the people who work at the cemetery tell you, make sure you're out by dark. There's some anxiety involved. So, and I was all hep. I was like, I know George Oscar Brown. I know where he was born. I know who he is. I know where he died. I know where he's buried. I'm going to sing the song of this unsung photographer who's documented so much. Well, around the same time, we're going to do a flashback. Around the same time that Wendell Lang in the early 90s was researching these photographs, I had also been researching some human skeletal remains at the Armed Forces Museum of Pathology, Walter Reed Hospital. It's now been moved somewhere else, but nonetheless, they had, and still do, have drawers, metal drawer cabinets you open up, and there are individual boxes with crania, skulls, and wired to the side of these skulls are lead projectiles. And, you know, a lot of them have sections completely missing. And I look at the labels and they say, Confederate soldier unknown, wilderness. So, flashback forward, now I'm thinking, well, here's these images. This series has skulls and skeletal remains. There must be, hopefully, a connection. And yes, here on these tags, they say that 24 of them in the collection, the vast majority, were donated by a Union surgeon named Reed Brockway Bontico. And he was originally from Troy, New York, and had been the
chief surgeon at Harewood Hospital outside Washington, D.C. during the war. And it was because of Dr. Bontico that we actually began to see photographic documentation of soldiers with wounds. And again, if you're familiar with Civil War photography, and there is a wealth of photography of men with their shirts dropped and showing punctures and amputations and god-awful gangrene. And these occurred because Dr. Bontico said, I'm going to set up a photographic facility and we're going to document this stuff. He really took to heart when the Surgeon General had said at the beginning of the war, you know, there's going to be some interesting science come out of this thing, and we better document this. We're going to understand how small arms fire and, you know, huge chunks of iron, what they do to the human body. So Surgeon General says, send these specimens in. We're going to establish what became the Armed Forces Museum of Pathology. And here I find, after realizing here's the wilderness, there's skulls, there's the connection, there's Bontico. I go to the National Archives, I go rooting through Bontico's papers, and I find that he makes a request a few months prior to him mustering out of service that on April 6th through 15th, 1866, he wants to go tour the battlefields around Fredericksburg. So, and he's taking with him his chief photographer, William Bell. I'm getting pretty excited about this stuff. And rooting even deeper into the paperwork, history of the museum, I find that on such and such date, like September 1865, a hospital steward comes to work there in the photographic department. George Brown. So, there's your connection. Well, not to drag this out real deep, but I'm beginning to be suspect of G.O. Brown and his ownership of these images. And I actually find, as I dig further, that at one point, Bontico has written to the collection after he's left. He actually took the skulls that are in this collection today. He took them with him up until about 1873. He took them back to Troy, New York, for his own amusement. But he saw that they really belonged with the big collection. So there they sit today. But it appears that out of the, now I do know, like I said, that there's the highest number we've seen is 121 etched into these negatives. I know officially now there was 121 images taken, but by 1874, when Bontico is writing back to the museum requesting some prints of these, he's being told 29 of them are missing, the negatives. So already, by 1874, the collection has some holes in it. And today, if you collect what is available, basically 43 are missing totally. So there's 78 out of 121 of these glass, all the negatives are gone. But now, as far as accounting them, thanks to Wendell Lang's cataloging and other folks, we can say that there's 78 of the 121. So in 2009, I guess it was, I
I wrote an article for Civil War Times with Sherman on the cover. I had nothing to do with choosing the cover. But I had an article. This was the April 2009 issue. They called it Picking Up the Pieces. I wanted something a little more poetic, like of skulls and battlefields or something like that. You know. But nonetheless, I laid out a little more detail what's going on. And in there, I pretty much lay claim that G.O. Brown, photographer, purloined those images. I think he, when he left the Army, got married, moved to Baltimore, he had a ready set catalog. I don't find any advertising for them, but I think he just, they were handy, they were relatively small and easy to handle, so what we see with his back mark are actually to be most likely taken by William Bell, the chief photographer. G.O. Brown was just the underling. But so roughly there you have that. And I brought some that once we're done here tonight, we can all come up and take a look at them up close if you'd like. But let me just go through the little slideshow now. Here we are with snapped off trees, all shot down by small arms fire, and the skeletal remains here. Let's see. This is actually over near Chancellorsville, more skulls sticking on stumps, and you have a rifle with the butt part of the stock all busted off, jammed to the ground. So some of these actually date to the 1863 Battle of Chancellorsville. And you might know that in 1864, a lot of new recruits on their way to the wilderness were passing through Chancellorsville and got a little freaked out by what they were seeing lying there from the previous year. But this group of three are in the wilderness. And I'll tell you, let's see. Coming up, I'll show you a... Well, let's get to it first, and then we'll... This is typical of a lot of this series. Just busted up trees from the ferocity of fire, artillery fire, snapping them off. This is actually slave quarters on the McCool farm. The location today is fairly easy to find. The terrain features are relatively easy. And now I'm going to show you a series all in a row. But you see this little man with the hat and the beard, very telltale outfit. He's standing with his... Some people said he's got his hand on an artillery shell stuck in a tree. I think he's just holding on to a branch. And there's a grave here. But nonetheless, that's number 103. And that was taken between the McCool farm and the Harrison farm. How many have been to Spotsylvania? How many know that battlefield? Okay, so if you're on that park road that swings down, it's pretty much near where the driveway will begin to take you back to the McCool farm.
John, that's 66 now?
Right. These are all April 1866. Any of the Spotsylvania ones are most likely taken on the 13th. Lyman's journal is recorded on the 15th, but on the 14th, he visited the Bloody Angle. But on the 13th, Bontico and his entourage are there. And to not belabor this, but I figured this all out because the last image taken, number 121, shows the sunken road at Fredericksburg, and it's really muddy, and you can see where bad erosion has just run, you know, the street into the non-existent gutter. So there was a gully washer before that picture was taken, and I found newspaper reports from Fredericksburg that indeed on that April day there was a gully washer. So the last picture they're taking is before they're leaving Fredericksburg. There's the sunken road. So we know that. And we know that Lyman actually talks about being stuck at Spotsylvania Courthouse when the storm hits. So we know that Bontico and Lyman, never the twain shall meet. Would have been cool if they talked about each other in some kind of correspondence, but they didn't. But they saw the same stuff within 24 hours of each other. Okay, take a good look at this fella. Okay, here's actually looking out from the intersection of the old courthouse, which is Blockhouse Road and Brock Road today, looking across where the Federals advanced on the 8th of May, 1864, across these fields, taken from inside Confederate works. There's that guy again, okay? Big beard, boots and stuff. And some people were probably figuring it out. Where is he going with this? Okay, here's a really good picture of him, okay? This is one side of a stereo view. Only original's 3x3, but look at his beard. It's like split. He's got a left side and a right side to it. And he's got these very heavy sunken eyes and this kind of swoop of hair going back. And he's got a good, healthy build. Hey, it does. Here is a portrait of Dr. Reed Brockway Bontico with his split beard and that heavy brow. So let's look one more. Let's go back. Zoomed it in. Same man, right? So there are 8 images, and I can see this distinct fellow there. At least 8 images out of 121, Dr. Bontico placed himself in there. So there's no doubt. Bontico was responsible for this series of images. And this is an example of what we are more familiar with. You know, it's drawn in ink. That's not really an arrow. Okay. But that really is a hole in his shoulder. Okay, so yes, this poor fellow, Peter Serlin from Pennsylvania Regiment, just showing the path of the bullet, where it entered and came out. These are the things that most people are familiar with when you say the photography of Dr. Bontico. This one's a little gruesome. This is probably top of the line, his most famous image. It's called, I believe it's A Morning's Work, showing the amputated feet and lower part of the leg. Now, here's where things really got good and exciting for me. I love this stuff. Notice these 3 skulls lying here. And I won't be able to convey it across on the screen because it's just not, you know, I don't have an overlay. But I will guarantee you, I'll show you this. This is that middle skull. So I got with the fellows at Walter Reed and I said, a lot of detail in that one, very specific features, identical cracks, you know, everything about it. So there it lies, April 1866. And here it sits in a metal filing cabinet drawer. I think it's in Silver Spring now. It's the only one I've been able to do. I have examined and photographed each of the Bontico skulls. And when I finally get my book done, which I told my publisher, you'll laugh, it was October of 2004, I said, I'm going to get you this book on these photographs. But in October 2004, I didn't know who Dr. Bontico was. I just was hunting for George Oscar Brown. Okay, so a lot of water has gone under the bridge. I told him in October 2004, I said, I'll have the manuscript for you by December. Okay, it's 2013 now. So he's a good fella, and he says, well, just get me the good book. Just get it right. Had I done it by December, everything would have been obsolete. So this is an interesting view of one of the two cemeteries that the burial parties created in the summer of 1865. This is cemetery number 2 in the wilderness. Cemetery 1 is right off of 20 at Saunders Field. There's nothing to see there now. I know that they recently had gone in with ground-penetrating radar to see if they could see anomalies. I haven't seen the report yet. But if you go to where Cemetery 2 is, just off of the Orange Plank Road, very near where Longstreet was shot by his own men, you can actually walk out in the woods and still see to this day the rows of depressions where the bodies had been exhumed. So they lay there, you know, for a number of years, and then by 1876 everybody had pretty much been relocated and now up on Marie's Heights. Vast majority are unknown. Interestingly, I don't have an enlargement of it, I don't think. Maybe I do. Yes, I do. Under good magnification, you can read the inscriptions. These are men from 16th Mississippi. And they made their way across the McCool farm over towards the angle to fill in the holes that, you know, from the guys getting killed and chased off on the morning of May 12th, 1864. But these fellas didn't make it. And there they are, April of 1866, lying in the farm field. And the location is really easy to find today. There's a secondary trench line that is visible here. But people don't know about it. It's kind of off the beaten path. But these people are all in the Confederate cemetery in Spotsylvania near the courthouse today. So you can actually decipher the names and go visit them. Here are some unknown U.S. soldier. And these, if you're again familiar with the field, and up until recently at the Bloody Angle, there was a bridge that you could go across right in front of two monuments that are sitting there. The bridge is gone, okay? So don't walk on the earthworks. Go down and cross. But this was taken for very near where the old bridge, the missing bridge, stood. And what you're seeing is the undulating terrain here with the Landrum House Ridge. And what you'll notice, if you stand there looking at this today, the original wood line is 200 yards deeper than it is today. Park boundary is at that 200-yard line, and unfortunately, in recent years, some folks have built some pricey homes right up to that line, so we can never restore the original tree line like they're doing in Gettysburg and so many places. Because we don't want to look at these people with their hibachi grills on the deck. But so nonetheless, there you go. Actually, they call it Stewart's Crossing. But we don't think that Stewart was ever there. There you go. Okay. Upon a hacked and barkless tree. There it is. And what I've been able to determine over the years is that that's not just like a piece of siding off of a house. That actually is one of the grave markers that they had sort of pre-manufactured and were carrying with them in abundance in summer of 1865. And they have a very talented sign maker because there's multiple fonts up there. I know, Rick, you appreciate fonts and graphic arts, you know, so. But now, here's the fun thing that I... Everything's fun. I love this. There's no downtime for me with this stuff. I looked at this picture. You remember, everybody was oohing and aahing, and I was in love with this picture. I had known this picture for years. So there I was at the Center for Civil War Photography convention, and I said to myself, self, you're going to find it. It took me about 4 months. And how did I do it? Well, there's actually a clue that was right there and nobody else saw it. I looked at this thing there and I said, wow, that looks like a 3/4 rear view of the McCool House. Now, I know McCool House doesn't stand anymore, but I got a really good copy of that house in, you know, 1880 or so. See that salt box style? So I said, I know how it sat on the landscape. I know I can angle it. So I was, you know, at first deceived. It was, you know, about 200 yards closer to the McCool House than it ended up being. So I was on that secondary trench line, the one that I showed you with the Mississippi graves. I stood there. I had a miniature version on a stick, and I'd have my wife take pictures of me standing holding the stick with the sign on it. Everything lined up with the compass, and I was like, okay, this works. Well, there was another view of clearly the same thing, not this close, but it was taken from down the line looking basically a triangulation, but you could see all the distinct features, the chopping and definitely the sign. And it was looking along this stretch of trenches. And I don't have a copy of that here. I do have it in the book. But here I am, standing on the spot looking. Well, there it is. There's that other picture. There is the Hacked Barkless tree with the sign on it. And it stood right here. And I knew it stood right there because the shape of the trench. Standing on that secondary trench line, it was easy to say, okay, there's the McCool House. Here's where it was. But I could not for 4 months get that thing to line up going the other way. So I said, it's got to be on the main salient. Going to be on the western face of the salient. So I parked and walked along the whole way with that other view, and I kept going back and back and back, and then it suddenly all fell into place. This earthwork berm here and the rising ridge where Emory Upton and his men assaulted on the 10th of May. So there's my spot. So I'm able to then stand in front of that tree, look directly towards McCool, and then do that one. And in the original, down in the back near kind of where the sign is today that says, please do not walk on the trenches, there's a little guy in a dark suit with a beard. Dr. Bonico was standing right there. I wish I had the large view of that. I know Rick didn't tell you. I've had some hellacious, excuse the French, computer issues here lately. So I had to really cobble together my slideshow. But this is my favorite thing. Because by knowing where that is, knowing you're at the McCool House, and knowing from the documentation the week that they were here, I'm able to stand there, give a day, take away a day, roundabout. I can stand, taking into account for daylight savings time and everything. I can stand there and look at the shadows cast on the tree with the sign, and I can calculate, you know, very close to the time that that image was taken. And then I was able to take all the rest of the series and move through the field and actually watch the sun move with me and cast the shadows in the right way for everything else as we go. So that solved the mystery. What's the language course where you learn languages? I can't think of it now. Rosetta Stone. That's the Rosetta Stone image, because it then placed everything else for Dr. Bonico's series. Shortly after that, here is now a face-on version, probably the most readily accessible and most often published version or image out of this whole series. The McCool House no longer stands today, but with the smokehouse, the kitchen, white-painted kitchen back there. And very possibly, maybe that's number 9. Now that I see it this big, this may be number 9 of Dr. Bontico there. So you saw it here first, folks. And this is a sample of what's written on the back of some copies that are in the West Point collection, you know. And there's a lot of details in here, you know, which help in aiding figuring out this stuff. Wilderness, battlefield, wounded trees, same spot, this about 1/2 mile southwest of Chancellorsville, 1/8 mile south of Plank Road, where Jackson fell. That makes it easy. You can place it on Google Earth and away you go. And this is the back of that one where I said May 8th, the Federals had swept across the field, and there was Bonico inside the Confederate works. But see, field northwest of Rebel breastworks, junction of old and new courthouse roads, over which General Grant's men made an unsuccessful charge on these works. Let me see real quick if there's anything else that I should show you with the lights on, but no, we'll just go with that. I hope this was entertaining in the least, and I will field questions if you might have any, plus I'll have available for your viewing up close some of these originals. So I'll open it up to questions.
the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould.